Welcome to the QP Diaries podcast. This podcast is all about inspiring and empowering the next generation of QP professionals and future quality assurance leaders in the UK pharmaceutical industry. On every episode, I'll be speaking to QPs from across the industry, and our listeners will have the opportunity to hear their stories, their expertise, and we'll be discussing topics to foster growth and learning to help you develop your career as a qualified person. If you're passionate about quality assurance and want to learn from some of the very best QPs and thought leaders from across the industry, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Dal Pawar, the founder of Assure Bio, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Robin. Welcome to the QP Diaries podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Dal.
It's good to hear. Yeah, this is the first recording of 2024 for the QP Diaries podcast, so it's good to have you on as the very first guest of the year. And the conversation today will, of course, be hearing about your career journey as a qualified person and the advice that you're going to provide to the next generation. But we're also going to be discussing quite an interesting topic, which I think our listeners will be intrigued about, and talking about your experience working on remediation projects during your career. But before we get into that, so for those who don't know you, can you share a brief overview of your career journey as a quality assurance professional and QP, please?
Certainly, yes. So I've been working in the pharmaceutical industry now for about 30 years. I started in my early 20s. So initially, I was working in the food and agricultural industry in testing laboratories, and started to build laboratory skills, and then got an opportunity to join a pharmaceutical company called Reckitt & Coleman, based in Hull in England. So initially didn't really know what to expect, but just joined from a QC perspective as a laboratory technician. Started analysing products like Lemsip and Fibergel, Disprin, coding products. And that triggered me starting to learn more about the pharmaceutical industry. I was very, very fortunate. And when I look back, I think I was so very lucky that the people around me were incredibly good at what they did. And they started to talk to me about the QP side of things. Now, being new to the industry and being relatively isolated within a QC laboratory, I didn't know much about the QP side of things at all. And the QPs at Reckitt & Coleman were very good. They gave me overviews, explained the importance, and then sent me on my first training course with an organization called David Begg, and it was an introduction to GMP. And as part of that, I learned more about the QP side of things. Reckitt & Coleman then offered a number of people the opportunity to train as a QP. And from my perspective, it seemed like an absolutely fascinating job. And the individuals there who were working as QPs said they would act as mentors for me, which was very kind. I got an opportunity to learn, an opportunity to gain qualifications, and an opportunity to learn from people who were very capable. That was excellent. So I progressed from a career perspective within Reckitt & Coleman, which then became Reckitt Benckiser. I moved through QC into laboratory management, performed technical and validation activities, moved into QA, quite a traditional career development route, and then started to perform the QP role. So trained at Reckitt & Coleman, then Reckitt Benckiser, went through the VIVA process and became an operational QP. It was fascinating because I was releasing creams, ointments, tablets, capsules, injection products. So everything from quite low complexity products all the way through to sterile, high complexity products. So a very good experience in terms of gaining breadth. Then I chose to move on from that company and move to a company called Smith & Nephew, where I was responsible for their contract manufacturing footprint for their wound management division. It gave me additional breadth because I was looking after medical devices, class 1 to 3, sterile and non-sterile, and aseptically produced pharmaceutical products. That involved a lot of factory assessments, a lot of travel, a lot of audits, a lot of inspections, a lot of interaction with global regulators. So the skill base and the breadth changed quite dramatically. And from a QP perspective, I also started to spend time actually auditing and inspecting operational QPs, not just across the UK, but across Europe as well, which gave me an opportunity to see how different QPs operated and what worked well, what didn't work well. So gained a lot of experience there. Moved on to GSK. Within GSK, I didn't operate as an actual QP, a working QP, but did get involved quite extensively with training QPs. And GSK as a company had training within the organization for their QPs. So I led some of that training. So again, very useful. Moved on into vaccine products, vaccine manufacture, again, operational QP. So my breadth in terms of products, in terms of complexity, in terms of size of companies was growing all the time. So my experience covered low complexity, relatively simple products all the way through to biologic and vaccine products, aseptically prepared, high complexity. And that helped because it gave me an understanding of the different levels of risk, the different levels of compliance challenge associated with those products. Then moved on again to different roles which didn't always involve working as an operational QP. So often as a senior quality person for a site or an organization, and a lot of interaction with QPs from a different perspective, either training or mentoring. And then ultimately I started to move into the contracting world. From a contracting perspective, I started to look very closely at roles where there was a high level of technical complexity. As you mentioned in your introduction, one of the things I looked for is the slightly different areas. So areas where there are problems or novel products, unusual products, or issues with regulators where compliance standards are not what they should be. So it brought me to where I am today. So a lot of experience from a QP perspective, releasing lots of products, different complexities, and also dealing, from my perspective, with more difficult situations.
Brilliant. Thank you for sharing that, Robin. I mean, looking at your experience, what, over 20 years then as a QP, and from when you qualified?
Over 20 years. I can't imagine how many batches I must have released during that time.
I can imagine.
It is, from my perspective, something that is quite humbling, because when you think about the batches you've released and the patients that equates to that can have been helped by those products, it is quite special.
Yeah, absolutely. And because you, I suppose, have worked with so many different dosage forms, as you say, going from the more traditional pharmaceutical products to quite novel products, how has your passion evolved over the years? Is there a particular area which you're highly fascinated in?
Surprisingly, no. I find that my enthusiasm today after being in the industry 30 years is very similar to day one, because there is always something to learn. There is always changes to adapt to. There are also new types of products and new people to meet. So for me, one of the great things about this industry is you can do a fascinating job and also help a lot of people, which is really nice.
Yeah, it's a unique position, isn't it? Being a QP and working in the quality assurance sector within the UK pharmaceutical industry. So yeah, I completely get that. And moving forward, then you mentioned now you're a consultant. So what I mentioned in my introduction, as you said, that on occasions you've now acted as a site remediation leader on a couple of occasions. Mm-hmm. So in particular, why is having the QP status so important in this role? And of course, to the organisation and the team that are working with and working around you?
For me, there is a really strong overlap between the QP role and focusing on improvement and remediation. So to operate effectively as a QP, you have to practically understand the nature of the product, the nature of the facility. You have to understand the people who are interacting with the product, the processes, the systems. You have to be very clear in terms of what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, what the requirements are, and why those requirements are in place. So those requirements from a QP perspective are very similar to what is needed to actually resolve technical challenges and compliance challenges, including in a remediation situation. Remediation often involves sometimes subtle challenges, and when there are either compliance issues or technical issues, you have to be comfortable not just investigating and understanding, but engaging with the people who are involved. So some really strong overlaps.
Yeah, so you believe having the QP eligibility and going through that training and gaining that experience, of course, is certainly beneficial to walking into an environment where you are working on compliance improvement.
Absolutely. And one of the key elements from a QP perspective is being clear when something is acceptable and unacceptable, including from a batch perspective. So a batch either will be suitable for release or will need additional work or will not be suitable for release. And part of, I think, being an effective QP is being very clear in the communication when you're in that situation. From a remediation perspective or a technical challenge perspective, the same requirements are in place. The aim is to be very clear in terms of what's acceptable and what's not, what has to be done and why. And obviously these things are a journey, so you've got to communicate with the people around you. So in the same way that a QP cannot act in isolation and should not act in isolation, it's the same when fixing products or sites or organizations.
Yeah. And what, with that in mind, what are the most common challenges that you faced or you've seen when supporting a site with compliance issues?
So each situation can be quite different, particularly in terms of the journey to get to that point where there is a problem. And one of the things that I think is absolutely key is not making assumptions. So I believe you have to immerse yourself in the situation to actually understand really what's going on. Often there will be people issues, cultural issues that need to be understood. And that's no different from some of the challenges that a QP will face. So from a personal perspective, I see certain common themes that do occur reasonably often. So challenges start to slip, standards start to slip, or a problem arises and isn't addressed quickly, and people don't address it in a timely manner. And then it starts to become the norm, and people get used to seeing the problem, and that then almost allows the next problem to arise and the next problem. So once a deterioration in standards or a slippage starts, it becomes a journey down. And part of the aim is to stop that really quickly. So understanding what's happening and why, and then why it's not being stopped is absolutely key. QPs, where they're acting in a remediation role or otherwise, can be absolutely precious in that kind of situation because of the background they have. One of the things that does stand out to me time and time again is what I would call an unhealthy norm. So it's a phrase that's used in the industry at times, and it's where people see a problem and see it again and again, and it starts to no longer be seen as a problem, and it's just the norm as to how things are. And obviously it shouldn't be like that. So that unhealthy norm stops being challenged, and then that facilitates and allows further deterioration. So that is something that is visible across multiple sites that I've worked with. One of the other things that is noticeable and increasingly prevalent, I think, is managers and senior leaders who don't necessarily understand the area or the complexity in which they're operating. And I think this is something where remote working can add to the challenge. So factories and pharmaceutical products can be complex, and things can change relatively quickly. So being present and understanding the dynamics of the organization, what's happening, when, why, and how, allows you to practically make good, strong decisions. That can be quite challenging if you are not present, if you spend a lot of time just in your office, or if you're working from home. It adds a much greater level of challenge. So that is a theme that I think is increasingly prevalent.
Yeah. So what you mentioned previously is to fully immersing yourself into the situation. And if you're remote or in the office too much and not with the team around you, then that can also lead to further challenges.
Absolutely. And if I'm operating as a QP or a senior quality manager or a technical or remediation lead, I will aim to immerse myself in the operations. From a personal perspective, I do not like working from home, and it's because I like to be available to the people around me that I'm working with. And I like to know and understand what is happening and why. And being present, I think it facilitates better cooperation, better communication, better decision making. So if as an operational QP, I'm going to be releasing a product, I like to think and feel that I know and understand the quality and compliance standards associated with that product, before it even gets to me. So I'm not relying solely on a batch document. I'm relying on the batch document supported by everything I know about the people, the facility, the products, the challenges faced. And I think that's really valuable.
Yeah. I can imagine when you're walking into these environments, and I'm sure many people have faced this who listening, is that when you mention that it's a bit of a snowball effect and you identify that it is spiraling out of control, how do you sort of step in and try to immediately influence the people around you, the management within the organization?
I think this is an instance where transparency matters, and the QP status does give you a level of personal credibility as well. I think when you're looking at a difficult situation, not jumping to conclusions, but actually learning, listening, understanding, and then communicating in an open and transparent way means that people are more likely to listen. I think with that, being absolutely clear in terms of what's acceptable and what's not helps as well. So when entering a difficult situation, I try very hard not to jump to conclusions, to immerse myself in the situation, to understand what's happening and why, to look for the themes and the underlying pressures, and then communicate in an open, transparent way. So sometimes that will mean you have to say, I'm sorry, at the moment I'm not sure why this situation has arisen, but this is what I would do to learn and understand, to give a more constructive answer. And sometimes you'll be in a position where you can be very decisive and very clear. This is not acceptable, and this is what needs to happen, and this is why.
Yeah.
That transparency, that openness, that communication allows people to listen and understand and interact in a constructive way. Because one of the things about this industry, and certainly all the companies and the sites I've ever worked at, people are typically in the industry because they care about what they do. They care about the products that are made. So people generally want to do the right thing for the right reasons. And as such, everybody is moving or trying to move in the same direction.
Yeah, so you believe that when it's, I suppose, going to the core of the individual who has entered the pharmaceutical industry, it is down to their sort of passion for patient safety at the end of it, ensuring sort of safe medicines are manufactured or distributed in their respective organisations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, that's right. We are a technical industry, and the technical complexity is increasing with time, with increased automation, more sophisticated equipment, and we've got artificial intelligence on the horizon starting to influence the pharmaceutical industry as well. So we are technically complex, and the people who are typically in this industry are people who are capable individuals. So they could move in many different career directions. I think they often move in this industry because the making products to help people, you know, does resonate.
Yeah, I'm sure a lot of our listeners will resonate with what you just said there. And following on from, the initial surprise going into an organisation which has those compliance issues, the goal, the success is to deliver on a successful inspection. So when preparing for inspection from a regulatory body, what are the strategies that you employ to ensure success?
Mm-hmm. I think there are certain there's a certain mindset required when it comes to regulatory inspections. So I think it's very easy to see them as challenging or a threat. And obviously, if the site or company is in a difficult place, that can be the situation. So from a mindset perspective, I think it's really important to know, understand and recognize that the regulators are doing such an important job. They are protecting the patients and they should not be finding issues of significance within the pharmaceutical industry. Now, we know pharmaceutical sites and the industry is complex, so there will be findings when you go through regulatory inspections. That tends to be the norm. But the aim from a site and professional perspective is that those findings should be as little as possible because the site or the organization is very good at what it does. So when preparing for an inspection, one of the key things from my perspective is making sure that everybody involved in the inspection understands what the regulator is aiming to do, why they're doing what they do, and how they operate, and preparing the subject matter experts so that they can engage in a professional way. The essence of strong inspection performance is all about information transfer. So understanding what information you have, what information the inspectors need, and getting it from you to them in as constructive a way as possible, and being able to respond to questions and challenges in a professional manner. So in terms of practical tools and techniques, the big picture aim is to always be in a strong state of control. So that should always be the goal, so that if there is a regulatory inspection, the preparation required is minimal because you are in a very strong state of control. So that is excellent from a business perspective. It's excellent from a compliance perspective. And the regulators know and recognize and understand when a site is in a strong state of control, which is how it should be. When looking at improvement, training the site in terms of the expectations, especially the subject matter experts, is key. Then preparing the site from a physical perspective to make sure that things are as they should be. And that does involve being out on the plant, understanding what's going on in the manufacturing areas, the engineering areas, the warehousing areas, the laboratory areas, so that that state of control that we should have is actually in place. And then making sure that the data packages that the regulator will be looking for is available and has been reviewed so that when it's presented, it can be explained and discussed in a constructive way. So the regulatory inspectors that we typically deal with in the UK from the MHRA are a professional an experienced group of people, and because they are experienced, it allows the discussions to be quite constructive, including when there are challenges, which I think really helps as well.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're going into it with the full transparent approach and communication with the inspectors, because you can't really hide anything, can you? And having that control is vitally important.
In addition to being a QP, I'm also an experienced, globally experienced aircraft auditor. And one of the things I find when I audit or inspect is it's very easy to understand when there is a problem, because people's body language changes, the language that they use changes, how they present data and documentation changes. So, you know, we are people at the end of the day. So trying to hide something is inappropriate and would be unsuccessful anyway with a good inspector. So the aim should always be openness, transparency, and try and do the very best that you can in any given situation. So yes, being prepared, but the preparation should, in an ideal situation, be quite minimal because you have a strong level of control all of the time. There are, you know, when you look across the industry, including beyond the UK, there are some sites and some companies that find it acceptable to work through peaks and troughs. So they will have an approximate schedule for inspections, and as such, they try and push their compliance standards. And then after an inspection, allow the standards to drop back a little bit. So you end up with peaks and troughs. From my perspective, that is always an unusual approach to take because it gives you business risk, it gives you compliance risk, it gives you patient risks for the people who are taking your products. So I think that, you know, we, from an industry perspective, we often talk about being inspection ready all the time, and the phrase is thrown around quite a lot. But really what we mean is being professional and competent and in control all of the time. Because if the business is in control, the quality and compliance standards are in control, the products will be compliant and suitable for use. And then you will have happy customers, happy patients for all the right reasons. So difficult at times to achieve, but that is what we are in the industry to do.
Yeah, absolutely. So peaks and troughs is definitely not something that you'd be recommending to anyone if they have that sort of mentality and mindset for their organisation.
Absolutely. For me, it is highly unprofessional.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, well, thank you for sharing your experience working on these type of projects, Robin. And I'm sure it's quite an eye-opener for our listeners, and potentially helps, or it's going to help some organisations who potentially are struggling at the moment. And on to the sort of final subject, and as you know, the QP Diaries is about advising sort of trainees and junior QPs who are just starting their journey to be getting the ambition to being where you are right now in your career. So I suppose taking it back a number of years, what guidance would you offer a younger Robin when starting out as a QP in your training?
So one of the things I found was that there is so much to learn, and when you look at the rules, the regulations, it looks like there is a mountain to get through. And there is, and it's quite difficult, especially when you're training and heading towards the QP Viva. However, from an advice perspective, I would say when you go through the Viva, the assessors are looking at how you can apply that knowledge to real practical situations. And because having a theoretical knowledge without the ability to practically apply will not make a great QP. And I think if you are starting this journey, you've got to have the intention to be a great QP because you impact people's lives in a very significant way. So I would say do not underestimate the value of learning academically, the rules, the regulations, the interpretations, but doing it in a practical way where you are understanding how they are practically applied within a real pharmaceutical situation, how it works in practice, how the laboratories work, how the manufacturing areas work, how the engineering areas work, how you interface with warehouses and distribution networks. So that practical interpretation, for me, I think is absolutely key. Not just in terms of preparing for a Viber, but also in terms of preparing for actually being a real operational QP. As part of that, that interaction should involve strong interactions with experienced QPs. So that cannot be underestimated, and the QPs that are supporting the development shouldn't just be reviewing application forms and having occasional meetings. They should be guiding the trainee in how to make strong decisions, how to make risk-based decisions so that you do not take excessive risks, and equally you are not so conservative that patients don't get the products they should be getting. So how to walk the balance. When you speak to experienced QPs, they will all have stories to tell, and those stories are really precious. They will tell stories about mistakes they've made, decisions that they've made that were excellent, albeit difficult, and things that they would maybe do differently. And I think that is very valuable to training QPs. And I would also say, immerse yourself in the operations. Talk to the people who are doing the job and learn from their experience. You know, QPs do not operate in isolation. And you have to learn to be able to take the pulse of a factory, of a laboratory, so that you can make good decisions.
Yeah, I hear that quite often in terms of not just, I suppose, speaking to the people around you within quality. It is also having that conversation with different departments within the organisation, so you have a well-rounded view of the situation.
And as a QP, to be a good and effective QP, you do need to interact with people from different departments, and it is important for you to have professional credibility outside quality assurance. So when you're talking to laboratory people or engineering people, they can explain how things work or some problems or challenges, and it can be a constructive discussion. So professional credibility is important, and talking to people and listening to people helps build that credibility.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think you mentioned it at the start of your advice there, that there is a lot to learn as a trainee, and so many different environments and companies that they're trying to learn their trade in. What do you believe is the, I suppose, most important personality trait, or any consistent personality traits that you've seen for experienced QPs, and that you would advise for any trainee who needs that sort of boost in confidence at the moment?
So that's, for me, that's a really fascinating question, because I absolutely love the job I do. I love operating as a QP. But I do recognize it is a difficult job, and there is a level of stress that goes with being a QP, because you are a decision maker. So when it comes to important traits for individuals who are looking to be or training to be a QP, I think being able to reflect on risk is really key. So within the industry, we talk a lot about risk-based decision-making. And over probably about the last 15 years, it has become increasingly prevalent in how we think, how we operate. And it can sometimes be talked about, but not truly implemented. From a QP perspective, risk-based decision-making is absolutely key, because the QP role is one where risk is part of the job. the understanding risk and making appropriate decisions is really important. Now, when it comes to releasing batches, there are certain things such as license compliance, which is an absolute. However, when you're looking at some of the GMP compliance aspects, and you may be looking at things like deviations, each deviation will present a level of risk. So it's very easy to be very cavalier, and you could release something that is inappropriate or that you should not release. Equally, it's very easy to be risk averse and not release or reject material that potentially would be suitable for release. So being able to work and understand risk and practically apply it to the QP role, I think, is absolutely fundamental. There is, I think, a challenge where if you don't immerse yourself in the operations, if you don't understand the complexities, the details, the improvements, the great things that are happening, as a QP, you can become too risk averse. Equally, you can become relaxed and go the other way. So walking that path is difficult. So certainly understanding and being able to act on risk and make good risk-based decisions and be able to justify and explain, I think, is fundamental.
Do you believe that's one of the hardest, approaches to confront as a trainee, where, yeah, there is a scale? You don't want to be at the top end, don't want to be at the bottom end. You need to be somewhere in a grey area, as a lot of people say.
I think so. I do think it depends a lot on your character and how you operate. So because I've been in the industry for 30 years and an operational QP for over 20, I've been used to operating within a factory, turning up at the factory every day, talking to people, going out and auditing. So I'm used to a certain way of operating, and that allows, from my perspective, a good understanding of risk, so that if you are making a risk-based decision, which you are with every batch you release, you can make an educated decision, and I think that's great. I think it can get very difficult, especially if you are not immersing yourself in the operations. Very, very difficult.
Yeah. So it is true. You truly need to be committed to the journey that you're going on as a trainee to a QP. And as you say, having those communication channels with all members of the organisation.
So from a personal perspective, I have never found the release decision making that difficult. Now, that may sound a little bit unusual, but I think if you are operating day to day within a factory environment and you know what's going on, the decision making on risk is relatively easy because you've got your finger on the pulse.
Yes.
Inevitably, as a QP, at times you have to say that batch is not suitable for release, that material or that batch has to be rejected, and that is part of the job. But having your finger on the pulse allows you not just to document the decision making, but also discuss that decision, and that could be in a regulatory inspection. It could be with the business managers within an organisation. And that does go with being a QP. So sometimes it's this, this is why I've released this batch. This was the assessment I went through. This was the decision, and this is why. And the regulators are very, very supportive of QP. So they tend to be quite constructive discussions. When you reject material, you are rejecting material that could potentially help somebody. So that decision should be made for the right reasons, but you do have to make it. But equally, you should be able to explain that this is the reason that material or that batch was rejected. This is the risk that I perceived. This is how it was quantified. This is why it was deemed unacceptable. So for a new QP or a trainee QP, the risk-based decision making has to be part of your life.
Brilliant. Yeah, thanks for sharing that advice, Robin. And I'm sure a lot of the trainees or even junior QPs at the early stage of their career will find that very, very valuable. And you mentioned earlier in the conversation that you love your job. So my final question for you is, what is your favourite part of a job, being a QP, a consultant on remediation projects?
So for me, this is a relative easy question, because I love factories, which I know when I say it can sound like quite an unusual thing, but I do love factories. So by first degree, I am a biologist, and I see a real parallel between factories and how factories operate compared to biological systems. There is a lot of complexity. There are lots of interrelationships. There are lots of feedback mechanisms. But I love being within the factory environment. And when a factory is running well, it is quite a special thing. And interestingly, from my perspective, as I've moved through my career, there are certain points where I've been working at a factory where it is running really, really well. The processes, the systems, the facilities, the people are all performing at a very high level. And that is like a holy grail situation. So from my perspective, I love factories and I like making things better. The QP role really helps with that. The leading improvement and remediation activities helps with that. And for me, I think it is a real joy.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't expect that to be your answer as the favourite part of your job, but yeah, it's certainly insightful, and I can understand the reasons why, as you say, when you're in a high performing factory, and as you say, that is the holy grail. But that's about it from me, Robin. So that's all my questions. So thank you for being a guest on the QP Diaries. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show. It's been very fascinating listening to all of your words of wisdom and the intricacies that you go through as a quality professional. If any of our listeners want to contact you regarding the service you provided, are you okay for me to share your details on LinkedIn?
Absolutely, and my profile is visible on LinkedIn as well.
Brilliant, Robin. All right, excellent. Yeah, well, thank you for your time. It's been a pleasure, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you very much, Dale. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. A huge thank you to our special guest and to our listeners for tuning into the QP Diaries podcast. We hope you enjoy the show. As the founder of Assured Bio, we created the podcast to support our wider quality assurance community, which aligns to our dedicated offering as a recruitment agency, providing services to the pharmaceutical and biotech industry across the UK. We have over 15 years experience in the industry, exclusively focused on recruiting senior quality assurance leaders and QPs. If you want to learn more about Assure Bio's recruitment services, or if you'd like to be a guest on the podcast, then please don't hesitate to contact me. Thank you.